Happy holiday season. This is Pat, and I am reading from the Clinton Journal for Friday, December the 26th. The county does some year-end business, reported by Gordon Woods. Clinton, in its regular meeting on December 18th, the DeWitt County Board worked through a variety of business. During the board's property committee report, the board voted to replace the flooring in the upstairs area of the jail for $5,425. It's an old floor and it needs to be done, reported committee chairman Terry Ferguson. Board member Melanie Tilley acknowledged the area still had the original flooring. John Wirtz gave a report for the Road and Bridge Committee. Wirtz had three motions to bring forward. The first was for the purchase of a 2023 tilt deck equipment trailer for $15,000 from Althoffer. This trailer is to move our mini excavator that we obtained in the past year or so and all the attachments that go to it, Wirtz said. County engineer Mark Mathan said the trailer was new, unsold model from 2023, so the county received a significant discount. Wirtz's next motion was for the purchase of a 2027 Mack Granite 64FR for $277,382 from Nextran Truck Centers. He said the truck would replace the county truck damaged in an accident. We have come to an insurance agreement, Wirtz said. Finally, Wirtz presented a motion to approve a professional services agreement for bridge inspection and program management services from WHKS and Company, not to exceed $85,085.75. This company also has done other work for the county. At this time, we still don't have an assistant engineer at the County Highway Department, so we thought this would be a good move forward so we can stay ahead of problems before they happen, Wirtz said. Mathan said it is important to have a second set of trained eyes to be able to adjust any bridge condition ratings. And this is for any of the inspections that are due over the next calendar year, he said. He said that included 50 standard inspections, two special inspections. The board passed all three motions from the Road and Bridge Committee. In the older and new business, Patrick Ryan reported the county posted a job for a county IT information technology person. Hopefully we will be getting applications coming in by January the 9th, Ryan said. We may meet again on the 15th, so we'll just have to see what comes in and how to schedule any interviews. And the board approved changes in the language of the county liquor ordinance. The benefit policy for change for job positions in the jail and sheriff's office and to placing an advisory referendum on next year's ballot pertaining to privately donated funds for private and homeschooled students. And from Springfield, the ICC issues a decision on the Ameren rate reconciliation. The Illinois Commerce Commission, ICC, struck $11.2 million from Ameren Illinois' $59.6 million multi-year rate reconciliation request. This decision is the first in a new performance-based evaluation process designed to reconcile actual utility spending with the approved investments outlined in the utility's multi-year grid and rate plans. The ICC's responsibility is to balance the interests of Illinois' utilities and their consumers, and our new grid planning process is designed to hold the state's largest electric utilities accountable for their performance, said ICC Chairman Doug Scott. The ICC's decision today reiterates that unsupported departures from Ameren's approved grid plan are inconsistent with the goals of the grid planning process, and it is the utility's responsibility to prove that any adjustments made are reasonable and prudent for maintaining our power system. The decision requires Ameren to include affordability data updates and cost-benefit analysis of related grid plan projects in future rate reconciliation dockets to allow the ICC and relevant stakeholders to evaluate the impact of Ameren's grid plan in real time. In 2024, the ICC approved Ameren's revised grid plan to strengthen power grid reliability, support progress toward Illinois' clean energy goals, and hold Ameren accountable for meeting the performance metrics set by the Commission. In addition to the electric grid plan requirement, the Climate and Equitable Jobs Act, CEJA, subjects Ameren and ComEd to performance-based evaluations in place of approved formula rates. The ICC issued its decision after closely scrutinizing Ameren's reconciliation filing, along with materials submitted by the utility, ICC staff, and various interveners over the course of an 8-month legal proceeding. In accordance with the Public Utilities Act, proposed costs are recoverable only when the utility demonstrates they are reasonable and prudent. In addition to traditional standards under the Public Utilities Act, the ICC evaluated Ameren's actual cost using the cost-effectiveness, coordinated long-term planning, equity, affordability, and transparency considerations outlined in the Climate and Equitable Jobs Act. The impact of the decision on the individual customers will vary based on the service class and energy uses. Ameren, Illinois serves 1.2 million electric customers in central and southern Illinois. In other news, Jackson retires from Clintonia Township. Lindy Jackson will retire on December 31st as Clintonia Township Assessor. Jackson worked part-time in the 1980s before becoming the Deputy Clintonia Township Assessor in 1989. She was in this position for 13 years. She then became the elected Clintonia Township Assessor, serving in the position for 22 years. Supervisor of Assessments Lori Evans said Jackson always enjoyed working with the public and took her job seriously. As Deputy Clintonia Township Assessor, Jackson served under Dixie Wirtz, to whom she gives credit for her leadership. Illinois Medicaid overhaul effective January 1st sparks backlash. A sweeping Medicaid and maternal care overhaul taking effect January 1st draws sharp criticism from Illinois Republicans who say Senate Bill 2437 crams too many major policy changes into one bill and opens the door to costly new mandates. State Representative Bill Halter, a Republican of Morton, said that the bill was pushed through as an end-of-session omnibus with little transparency or input from Republicans. "We hate those omnibus bills," said Halter, who is also a physician. "These huge Medicaid bills have so many policies shoved into them. We're frozen out of the final decision-making." Halter says the most controversial change creates the new category of non-citizens eligible for Medicaid-style benefits. This bill allows asylum seekers and people from countries with documented human rights abuses to qualify, an expansion he calls a backdoor increase in taxpayer-funded coverage as border encounters rise and many asylum claims are denied. "In our view, this is just another way to include a disputed group of immigrants or non-citizens, especially given how the Biden administration has opened the border and labeled people as asylum seekers when many of those claims are fraudulent," said Halter. So now Illinois wants to include those asylum seekers in Medicaid, which will balloon the budget. To me, it looks like they closed one door on the immigrant adult health care program, they opened another for undocumented or illegitimate asylum seekers who stayed past their determinations. Governor J.B. Pritzker's administration ended the health benefits for immigrants adult program on July 1, 2025, after costs far exceeded estimates, freezing new enrollments and phasing it out while keeping seniors' coverage. Supporters frame SB 2437 as expanding maternal support, including doula care, but Hodder says it asks too much of taxpayers. Though his wife is a doula and he supports the profession, he argues the bill's approach is financially reckless. Not all insurance companies pay for a doula. Usually you pay out of pocket, he said. This bill makes Illinois taxpayers pay for doula care for Medicaid patients. I don't think that's the wisest use of our health care dollars. What he finds outrageous, he said, is that the bill includes abortion doulas, meaning the state will cover doula services for individuals undergoing abortions or taking abortion-inducing medication. They're going to have doulas who will hold your hand while you have an abortion, Hodder said. Not only does Medicaid pay for your abortion, but now it pays for someone to help you through it. Most Illinoisans would say that that's way too far. Hodder noted that SB 2437's doula expansion was heavily championed by State Senator Lakeisha Collins, a Democrat of Chicago, as a way to improve maternal outcomes. We are enabling the continuous support for mothers to have a doula by their side and be able to rely on their services, said Collins. With this legislation, we continue our commitments to the mothers of Illinois, and especially those on Medicaid, with better support and more resources available throughout their pregnancy. Hodder disputes that the evidence supports such a broad mandate. It sounds good, but there's no hard evidence that doulas improve maternal and newborn mortality across the board, Hodder said. To extend it to those who have an abortion is really counterintuitive. And now, from the op-ed pages, They Are My Why, from the Mac desk of Billy McMacken. This will be my second Christmas without my mom, Lily, and my dad, Bill Sr. And I'll be honest, the holidays still don't feel the same without them. As a kid, I never once questioned whether Christmas would be good. It always was. What I didn't understand back then was why. I didn't see the long hours. I didn't see the sacrifice. I didn't see how hard my parents worked, not just in December, but all year long, to make sure our family had a Christmas filled with warmth, laughter, and love. Now I do. I see it every time the calendar flips to December. I feel it in the tired bones, the late nights, the mental math of how to make everything work. And I understand more than ever that the magic of Christmas doesn't just happen. It's built quietly by people who love you enough to put you first. My parents did that every year, without complaint, without expectation. They gave us more than gifts. They gave us memories, traditions, a sense of security that told us everything was going to be okay. They are my why. Everything I try to do for my family now, every tradition, every gathering, every attempt to make Christmas feel special, is rooted in what they showed me. It's my way of honoring them, of carrying them forward. If there's one thing I have learned since losing them, it's this. Life is short, painfully short, and none of us is promised another Christmas. So hug a little longer, laugh a little louder, put the phone down, sit at the table, make the drive, say the things that matter. Enjoy the holidays, love each other, make time for your friends, your family, and the people who mean the most to you. Because you never know when it might be the last one. From my family to yours, thank you for your continued support this year, and on behalf of all of us, have a blessed Christmas. Billy McMacken is the owner of the Normalite Newspaper Group. Disc Golf and COVID. The column, Dear Clinton, by Joe Mellon. Hi, Clinton. I'm that poor old man on the north side throwing frisbees into the street and at disc golf baskets. 6 years ago, I thought disc golf was for kids, like trick cereal. But I watched some edited coverage of professional tournaments on YouTube, and disc golf suddenly became a passion of mine and still is. In August 2019, I trudged to my local Atlanta, Georgia area, play it again sports, with most all of my old rusty ball golf equipment in tow. I walked out of there with two deluxe starter kits of disc golf equipment, along with towels, mini drivers, which are markers, and a few extra discs, an even trade. Merrill, my partner at the time, gave up the sport due to whiplash, but she was a great caddy and a shoulder to cry on as I learned the Wills Park and East Roswell Park course layouts and the rules and the subtle nuances of this great sport. Then came the Ides of March 2020. That's what I call it. A lot of talk in the media about the coronavirus quickly turned into shutting down of major sporting events, the wearing of surgical masks by the general public, and the roping off of public areas where people gather. The world turned upside down. I could take my mask off at work only after I closed my office door. You had to either get vaccinated or have a negative COVID test within 2 days to attend some public theater shows. But the local disc golf courses were still open, and we played after work and on the weekends through the rest of the year and beyond. It was eerie to see perfectly fine park gathering areas roped off like crime scenes as we meandered on the golf course. The restaurants we used to eat at after playing disc golf were takeout only or drive-through. Everybody has their own story of how they got through that nerve-wracking era. There was no toilet paper in the stores for over a year. Professional sports games and matches were on TV with no audience. There were spies in the stores to make sure your mask covers your nose. I noticed an easing of restrictions right around July 2022 when a couple of life-altering events happened. No time to go into that now. By the start of 2023, most pandemic rules had been lifted. By the start of 2024, I had definite plans to move back to Central Illinois after 34 years away. So what about you? How did the three-year COVID-19 pandemic impact your life? If there is another similar event, what changes do you hope will be implemented? I hope the news coverage is more consistent and timely than what we experienced. The jumbled reports, mixed with unbased, aired opinions, led in many to draw their own conclusion about the rules, which is never a good thing. However, we did advance the use and technology of video meetings. We learned much about working from home, and we survived. And now the On Point column by Richard Koritz. An opinion changed. I rarely concern myself with holding a minority position if I believe in the issue or the facts. I will also change my opinion on an issue if the facts merit a change of opinion. I readily concede that I was of the opinion that Trump's imposition of tariffs would have a dreadful effect on the economy. Here in the Farm Belt, many farmers are feeling pain from currently losing market share of commodity sales to China. However, the rest of the economic indicators are positive and the farm situation is improving. I have simply had to learn that Trump's agendas are not conventional, and one has to wait and see how the game is going to play out. This brings us to Trump's recent executive order on marijuana. Trump has changed the legal category of cannabis, THC, from a Schedule I drug to a Schedule III drug. That is significant. 40 states have legalized cannabis for medical use, and 25 states have done so for recreational use. Illinois is among both of these categories. If you go north of Lincoln on Old 66, there is a large cannabis factory that is a major employer in Logan County. It should be noted that cannabis possession and sales are still criminal offenses at the federal level. However, the schedule reclassification by Trump will greatly reduce federal law enforcement's attention to marijuana offenses. Several years ago, I got into a heated argument with some state law enforcement individuals who wanted to aggressively go after marijuana offenders. I started I stated my preference was to go after the meth and crack offenders and simply go after the marijuana offender if it came about from a meth or crack investigation. I stated it was my opinion that cannabis would be legal in Illinois within 10 years of that debate, and I thought the other investigations were of better use for taxpayers. Needless to say, the police officers took a dim view of my analysis and said marijuana would never be legal in Illinois. Today, in Illinois, you can procure cannabis in almost any community from licensed vendors. My political analysis was spot on, but my view of the use of cannabis was off. I viewed cannabis as a soft drug, which was less harmful than alcohol. The chemical toxicity of cannabis was very low until the late 1990s, from my observation. The guys using pot were simply being mellow in the back of the bus. It wasn't a big deal. The real problem back then was heroin and cocaine. Times have changed. The states have legalized cannabis, and the cannabis growers have used modern plant techniques to strengthen the potency of the cannabis. The cannabis of 2025 is a whole lot more potent than that of 1960. The problem is that the general public is talking about the pot of yesteryear and not today's vintage. It is entirely different. In my semi-retirement, I have stopped taking private cases. My practice is almost entirely court-appointed cases in Logan County involving abuse, neglect, and child custody matters. I am seeing more and more parents using cannabis in neglect and abuse cases, stating they use it to calm themselves. My observation, they calm themselves to the point that they don't care for the children. That doesn't work for anyone. Cannabis use can also impair one's driving abilities. There are many vehicle accidents that probably marijuana involved, but it is rarely prosecuted. There does appear to be more law enforcement problems, law enforcement attention to the impaired driver problem than the child neglect abuse problem. The legalization of marijuana simply allows for those that like cannabis to justify their personal abuse of the drug. That same observation can be made for alcohol abuse. I foresee cannabis abuse becoming more and more prevalent, which simply puts the public at greater risk. The one thing about Trump's executive order that I find positive is the classification of cannabis as a Schedule III drug. That is an acknowledgement that cannabis is not as dangerous as heroin and cocaine. This allows for more medical research. Cannabis is shown many positive aspects for pain relief and treatment of certain eye afflictions. Research in those areas will probably be expanded, and that may well be the best result of the executive order. As for me, I will stick to my drug of choice, caffeine in a cup of coffee while inhaling the wood smoke from a campfire of an evening. That for me is contentment. Richard Corrix is an Illinois native, attorney, and former DeWitt County State's Attorney. IDNR collecting discarded Christmas trees for fish bait. Springfield, Illinois Department of Natural Resources, IDNR, fisheries biologists are collecting live Christmas trees to be used as fish habitat in local lakes after the holidays. The collected trees will be bundled together, weighted, and submerged at lakes, providing critical habitat for multiple fish species and promoting algae growth for insects and attract fish for anglers. The trees will naturally decompose over time. Maps and coordinates of the tree habitat locations are available online or from each lake's biologist. Visit the IDNR Office of Fisheries website for drop-off location information and instructions. Trees should be placed only in the designated area for each site and only during designated drop-off dates. Trees must be free of stands, lights, ornaments, and tinsels. Wreaths and garlands will not be accepted. drop-off locations and dates include the following, and this one for Clinton County is the Spillway Recreation Area. From December the 26th to March the 1st, place the trees in the area designated by signage near the Little Prairie Nature Trail. We have one obituary for Terry A. Yates, Y-A-T-E-S, of Decatur. Terry A. Yates, 83, of Decatur, passed away at 7:30 a.m. on December the 21st at the Ark at Hickory Point in Forsyth. Services will be conducted at 10 a.m. on Monday, December the 29th, 2025, at Calvert Funeral Home, Clinton, with Pastor Mark Gehrig officiating. Burial will follow at Oak Park Cemetery in Clinton. Visitation will be held from 2 to 4 p.m. on Sunday, December the 28th, 2025, at the funeral home. And now in sports, the Lady Maroons crush the Lady Rockets 62-35, as reported by Mark Rogers of the Clinton Journal. On the evening of December 18th, the Lady Maroons were at home playing the Roanoke Benson Lady Rockets. The Rockets had the better record, but the Lady Maroons had the better statistics. The Lady Maroons had a better winning percentage, along with several others that gave the home team a slight advantage if they played well. The first quarter was close, with the teams tied a couple of times, but at 9 even, the home team started to edge away. The first quarter ended with the home team taking a slight edge, leading at 13-10. In the second quarter, the Lady Maroons kicked in their defensive side while maintaining a solid offense. At the halftime buzzer, the Lady Maroons had a strong 30-16 lead. After a break at the halfway point, the visitors regrouped and came alive, giving the home team all it could handle and staying close in the quarter, scoring 14 points to Clinton's 15. That still gave the Lady Maroons a 45-30 lead headed into the final quarter. Clinton regenerated during the quarter break and didn't look back. The home team took the game to the Rockets, and the Rockets' jets failed them. The Lady Maroons went on a 17-6 run in the final quarter to win over the Rockets 62-35. The Lady Maroons held the Rockets' top player to just 10 points in the game, and she was the only Rocket in double figures. The home team was led by Carly Anderson with 23 points, including 2 three-point baskets and five baskets from the free throw line. Carly was followed closely by Clara Dempsey with 22 points, including 3-point shots, and Lila Clover with 11 points with 1 three-point basket. I have been told by several basketball coaches that if the team can get 3 players in double figures, they will more than likely win. The Lady Maroons have been proving this true in the last few games. The Lady Rockets were led by Brianne Harms with 10 points. Harms has a 50% average of making 3-point baskets, but on this night had no threes to her credit. After this game, the Lady Maroons go to a 7-4 overall, and the Lady Rockets are now at 8-6. And now we have story of the gingerbread challenge. There is a front page picture of 4 girls seated at a table enjoying a gingerbread. The Vault recently held a student ambassador Christmas party. Student leaders were challenged to build gingerbread houses. The trick was doing it while wearing socks over their hands. Great idea for a fun activity. And now, a couple of pages from the History Almanac. In 1947, heavy snow blanketed the northeast United States, burying New York City under 25.8 inches of snow in 16 hours. The severe weather was blamed for about 80 deaths. And ending up with 1982, the Man of the Year in Time magazine was a computer. It was the first time a non-human had received the honors. And I believe this year it was the AI that's receiving some of the honors. So enjoy the rest of your day. Have good holidays. Stay safe and stay warm. I'll be back with you again.